I'm Robin Daly, presenter for the show and also founder of Yes to Life, the UK charity that's working hard to make integrative medicine available for people with cancer, and indeed to move UK cancer care as a whole towards integration. My guest today is also somebody completely dedicated to changing the lot of people with cancer. His name's Daniel Stansiu, and he lives in Holland. I'm talking to him there now over the internet to find out more about his work. Hi, Daniel.
Hello, Robin.
Really pleased to be interviewing you at last. I came across you initially because I was sitting in a call waiting queue on my phone, and I was idly reading the seriously small print on a bottle of supplements from MCS Formulas that happened to be on my kitchen table. Down one side, I noticed it said, "We donate 50% to improve and extend the life of cancer patients. Learn more at mcsformulas.com. Well, doing what I do, I thought, well, this is something unusual and very interesting. 5 or 10% would have looked like a nice bit of CSR, corporate social responsibility, but 50%, I knew it had to be somebody who's on a mission. So I was right. I did take a look. On the website, and I ended up contacting you to get you on the show, and you are a man on a big mission. Behind most stories that display the level of passion and commitment that you've clearly got, there is almost uniformly a backstory, a personal challenge that provided the motivating force in the first place, a kind of launch pad into an unexplored and unplanned world. Yours is certainly no exception, and I wonder if you'd mind starting by telling us what happened in your life. It must be something approaching a decade ago now.
Yes. So first, thank you very much, Robin, for the time that you put in investigating the story and understanding, and also our communication prior to this meeting. Yes, the story, it's a long story. I will try to go as fast as possible through that. So first, I'm a Romanian of origin, for a long time in the Netherlands, so more Dutch than Romanian. I came here back in 2004 to do my PhD in physics. That went very nice. We've made some very nice discoveries there that were believed impossible by the world, based on theory and on practice. And those results led to what we call in the Netherlands the Nobel Prize. It's called Spinoza Prize, so the Dutch Nobel Prize. After that, the life was going great. I joined a company, a global company, went into research and development, and fast moving into also responsibilities in strategy. So I was already at 32 years old, getting to a director level when, again, the life was going great, when then my wife was diagnosed with a very aggressive form of cancer, adrenal cancer, which is both very, very aggressive, but also very rare. So that combined with the fact that she was already in advanced stage, in stage four, led the doctors to conclude that she only has a few months to live. So essentially they said, well, we do have a combination of chemotherapy that is very toxic, because there are some of the most toxic chemotherapies, and there are three in combination, and that may extend life with a few months, but of course the quality of life will be very bad. So you decide, but essentially they suggested probably better don't do it. So there was no option from the conventional treatment point of view. Just 2 months after that, my mother was also diagnosed with cancer, with colorectal cancer. So for me, the feeling was like a war,
yeah,
because those that you love they are falling down around you. Fortunately, at that time, I had the full support of the company I was working for, where they said, Daniel, go home and you come back when you solve your problems, while being paid.
Wow. That's one good piece of news, eh? Fantastic.
Yes. So then what I then started to do is, like everybody, going deep into, so I did have this, a scientific background. I knew how to look at scientific papers and so on, but I did not have any experience in the medical space. So I went, very fast into all kinds of treatments that would be available. And I looked, of course, at alternative treatments, and soon I went into the literature, into the science, and we did access some clinics in Germany that helped me to gain time to go, into deep enough into identifying potential treatment solutions. I was praying at that time to God that that we will be helped with my wife, and that I can help other people, because I've seen all the pain, of course, that is in that field. Interesting enough, in like half an year, while also praying and doing my best, I was already representing a German clinic at meetings, actually in London, with owners and doctors of clinics from Europe, cancer clinics. So very fast the information came to me, like from the sky, And very fast I got to the point of understanding, or starting to have a feeling of what is, valuable. And what helped me a lot to identify value in this space, because this space is, of course, we have information coming from all directions at different levels. Again, science, and alternative, traditional medicine, and so on. And what helped me a lot to be able to run, to fly through the information and pick up value, was applying two major filters. One filter is whether there is science strong enough for something to be effective and against cancer. And second is if there is enough science and I understand why that can work, then to have at least case reports, if not clinical trials, on humans, where that approach has been used with positive results. And these are two major filters always for me. And of course, the cherry on the cake is if there are anecdotal stories, on top of that, then that's super. I realized that by applying these two major filters, I will lose some value, let's say, some of the valuable treatments that do not have enough science, or because there are, I think this helped me a lot. And I think it's very important to mention also a little bit that, one, as while I have a strong scientific background, I also have a strong spiritual, value and compass and beliefs. And I also think that science, and I think it's very important to understand, that's what helped me to, to have the discoveries that I had during the PhD, is to understand that science, it's a language. It's a language where we try to put on the paper what God made, what nature, the nature, everything that is around us. But this, of course, is limited by our understanding, and also by our perceptions, our biases, right? Even, so we have always to keep our mind open, while of course using science as a reference point, knowing that this is the best we know, is not what it is the best we know until that point. So That's, I think, very important for everybody. And to specifically, if we act in a field like oncology, which is one of the human challenges where we do not have, you know, yet full solutions. And you know, if somebody would say, well, you shouldn't, you just look at science, then you would say, okay, but then there is no point of you know, or you know it, then there is no point of having, you know, academic research, because that's, you know, the point of that is to go into unknown and explore and extract value from unknown, you know, make it known. So anyway, so this is it. What I then also realized during that time, going deep into the research, is that since I speak about academic space, is that we as society, we invest a lot into universities to find, you know, new solutions, to discover new treatment options. But at the same time, we have, you know, academic spaces as an island, and then you have the clinical space, which is another island.
Yes.
And at the same time, we only have one small bridge between these two islands, which is defined by business. And business has business needs in the world that we live today. And the priority there is not the person, but the priority is the results of the company. Why? You know, I had an example. I've seen a company that had a solution a partial solution for a liver disease, so that things were staying stable after doing that treatment. And one day this company found a full solution to cure that problem. And suddenly the investors ran away. Why? Because this company would lose the recurring revenue. So who are the investors? Are actually our pension funds. You know, it's us. So it's not the company. And so this is the system that we all invented and we are all responsible for. So the question is, okay, it is what it is. I mean, this is it. This is where we've got. So what can we do from this point on better? And I think I will come back to this point, but this is what I realized. I realized that because of this challenge of humanity, I would say most of the discoveries remain in academic space, not transiting to the clinical space, not because of bad intentions, but because of the system, how the system works.
It doesn't support it. You're right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
very interesting. Lots of really interesting points you made there. Yeah, I completely concur with your view of the system isn't really structured in order to find the answers and to deliver them. Also, very interesting what you had to say about your kind of encompassing of science and spirituality, which people tend towards one side or the other of, and see that see them as contradictory or almost, or you know, exclusive. And but you're actually saying that an important element of science is within the spiritual realms, if you like. And that's very interesting. And I think, again, I wholly support that. And the thing about it is that I think that they both share is this interest in the unknown, this recognition of the unknown, acknowledgement of the fact that actually we don't know, and less interest in saying we know, we know, we know, we know, we know. They're continually trying to reinforce what we know, but more interest in what we don't know yet and looking forward.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah, very interesting indeed.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk. for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So indeed, the question is always, like you said, well, we can always say, well, we know, and that brings so many things into my mind, you know, and I'm not going to go into those examples, but that I think keeps everything, not only, you know, science, but business and so on, keeps it back.
Right.
You know, it reminds me when I joined first time on, you know, the company, I joined one group. Where they thought something, okay, something is not possible, and they give it to me as a first assignment, you know, and it was so easy. So with the same tools, you know, just putting whatever, moving some LEDs closer to something, and it was possible. So things usually, this brings me to another point, is that I think everything that is complex is not, is complex because we don't understand it. You know, once we will understand, it will be simple. And I would say, of course, you know. So I think we always have to have, indeed, we need to take into account what is known, but again, not as a limiting factor. And so then when you look into, indeed, science now in oncology, you see, such a large spectrum of findings, you know, that could help increase the effectiveness of conventional treatments, to findings, and we can zoom in into that, and, you know, mechanism and so on, to findings that can be, you know, not alternatives, I would call, but new options for conventional treatments. And you can find in science space, in academic space, you can find so much support for traditional medicine, you know, for many of them. You can also, by the way, when you apply that filter, you will also not find support for others who, by the way, like, for example, some people that are listening will not like this, but that's my view. For example, B17. B17 doesn't go through the filter of science. And by the way, as I'm in contact with so many doctors from around the world, at least those with whom I'm in contact, they say, well, we tried, it didn't work. So it's funny to see that these filters actually are reflected, you know, in the real life. So my point is that in academic space, you have the full spectrum of biased people and unbiased, you know, that they look at new things, you know, they have open mind, they even look maybe at B17 or whatever, you know. While you get a lot of science for vitamin C, for example, high dose, or, you know. So it helps you really, again, identify value, I think. Not 100%, but enough to be able to. So that's what I did for my wife, for my mother. And we started to implement a lot of this knowledge from very simple options to more, advanced options. Including, treatments that would be only available in a few places around the world that would cost maybe, €50,000 per month.
Right.
But I really wanted them. And then I had to go back to the patents and also again connect myself with doctor scientists around the world to see how can I define the formulation, because they may be intravenous, and how can then define the a safe treatment protocol, and then where in this world we can start the implementation. And not to speak about, you know, the question where to buy them, you know, the raw material. So we've been through all these steps, and we succeeded to start implementing some of these options that that added a lot of value for my wife, so that she lived years instead of a few months, and that a good quality of life. 3 years later, after that, we lost her. I think if we have had all the knowledge that you know that took time to get it, and we would have had better results. And the other point is, when you start to implement new treatments, you have to move step by step, because you step into uncharted territory, and you should not make mistakes, because the priority is, of course, the you know, the loved one. You have only one, you know. So that means that slows you down, let's say, as a single person, but as a clinic, as a doctor, you can learn fast, you know, much more.
Right.
Yes. So we did that, and we like I said, we got a lot of value out of that. So we lost my wife at the end of 2016, and mainly it was for the first time we went back to the hospital, and it was a treatment for high calcium in the blood, and they did it wrong. And that made me realize, and I even explained exactly, because the tumors were at the lungs. So that made me realize that I think one other thing that this world is, you know, missing is hospitals that have the knowledge, you know, the deep knowledge, and on one hand, how to deal with cancer patients that are in sensitive situation. They are, let's say, on the edge. So if you are going to put, for example, a lot of saline in their blood and clean up if you want to clean up the calcium, you will clean up a lot of other good things, you know, and their balance is gone. That is very thin. So if, you know, when you have the hospital that have the experience with that, and at the same time, don't see a cancer patient as a terminal, but see as, okay, this is a human, I'm going to do the best for him, then you get a different result. And that's what we have very little, I think, in the world.
I agree. Yeah, it's a very good point you make there. Is that something I realized when my own daughter was a patient, is that you, when you get information from a doctor or a nurse or anybody else, you have to think, well, how are they seeing this patient? Are they seeing this patient as somebody they're trying to keep alive, or are they seeing this as somebody who's dying, and therefore we just have to make them comfortable? And if you don't understand how they see the patient, then you misinterpret what they're saying. You must get into their mindset, in fact, to understand.
Yeah. Perfect point. So this is so important. It reminds me, you know, because Dr. Hosenke come to the hospital, we check, and then they see the tumors at the lungs, and they say, oh, you know, your wife has, so we are not going to treat her. Say, hey, but this is what you said 3 years ago also, you know. So this is so important point. And this also reminds me, okay, as a nice story, a friend of mine with his father, cancer patient, the doctor says, well, he's going to die in 1 year or so. 10 years later, his father is alive, the doctor is not alive anymore. So, you know, another friend in the United States was saying to the doctor, we are all terminal patients on this planet. So, you know, so we have to have that in mind and do the best we can for everybody. And the rest is in the hands of God. What is that best, you know?
Absolutely.
We did the best we could for my wife, to the best of, you know, our capabilities at that time. We did get more than what would have been possible, and I'm looking at that. I'm not, of course, you know, it was extremely painful. I was crying for like 2 years or so, but I'm, you know, looking back, and those years that we've got were extremely valuable. We probably live more intensive the life compared to all our life before. And again, that was very valuable. Now going, my mother, on the other hand, she is cancer-free today. Just before that happening in 2015, as I was also involved in forums and so on, more people would know about me. They were asking a lot of questions, and it became unsustainable for me to answer all these questions. So what I did in 2015, I decided to start a blog, cancertreatmentresearch.com, where I started to share the information I knew in a structured way, in a way that would be actionable information. So not only what it is, why that could work, what is the science, but also where that can be, you know, accessed and how to implement. And all that I wrote such that not Daniel was speaking, but science was speaking. So everything with references in scientific literature. So I did that as much as I could. On my side, I had a book, and I still have, of like 1,000 pages of structured treatments, but I share there. It takes time to share, so I share there based on the time I had available. Mm-hmm. And that was a way to have a more sustainable way to help, you know, people. And by helping, what I mean is providing information. It's not, it shouldn't be seen as output, but as input. So input for thinking, for discussing with the doctors, with healthcare, you know, providers, to consider what are the options. The goal there is also to focus on one hand on what are the options to increase the effectiveness, and we can come back later to some of this, and to increase the effectiveness of conventional treatments like chemotherapy, radio, immunotherapy, but also at the same time, as I mentioned before, looking at new treatments. So that was the cancer treatment research starting in 2015. It grew quite fast. Lately, because of other activities, I haven't had the time to publish there, but I intend to continue. It grew quite fast so that it reached every year more than 500,000 visitors. Wow,
amazing. Amazing. Yeah, well, it's a fantastic resource outside, clearly, and still lots of very good, relevant material there for people to draw on.
It is, because even if it's written, you know, a few years ago, this is very, I mean, what is in the, you know, in the conventional space, it's mainly.
Can I just double back on a couple of things? The first thing is you very quickly glossed over what you did at university. You mentioned it, but actually that was a very striking example of science approached in a different way, I think, and it kind of illustrates your approach to science very well. I wonder if you could just tell people briefly, without frying our brains with anything too complicated, just what you did there, what the status quo was, and what you achieved while at university.
Of course. So you are referring to the time during the PhD study.
Yes.
Yes, so the study was in the field of magneto-optics, and in that field, what scientists are doing are, on one hand, they use light to investigate matter. At the same time, because, you know, the light pulse, it's one of the short man-made event. It is one of the shortest man-made event. It is as short today. You can make the, you know, humanity can make a light pulse as short as attoseconds, not even femtoseconds, attoseconds. What it means, so femtosecond is 10 to the minus 15 of a second. Attosecond is 10 to the minus 18 of a second. It can be so short, the light pulse, that it can be used to see the electrons moving, you know, around the nucleus, to look at those. And you can also, at the femtosecond level, what we were doing, we were hitting a magnetic material, and the spins of the electrons start to move, and you look at them, you know, how they move. So that's how you use. So you use essentially what is called Faraday effect. So when you move with the light through a magnetic material, then the polarization of that light changes, and that's what you look at. Now the dream was, hey, we can use light to look at things, but can we use light to influence things in a manner that we want? Because if we could do that in magnetic materials, then we could use light photons, which, you know, light is consisting out of photons. We could use photons to switch magnets. And we can use that, we can do that very fast because we have such a short pulse, you know? So that was the dream. And then there was a lot of science in the field of magnetics showing that that should be impossible for multiple reasons. One reason is if you count how many photons you have in a pulse and how many magnets you need to switch, you have one photon for like 100 magnets. So how could you switch? You know, that's impossible. And even if you have enough photons for all these magnets, to make it simple, you know, then the point is when you hit a magnet with light, this magnet is dizzy. It's dizzy for, let's say, 1 hour, but your pulse is already gone. So how can you induce coherence into an area where you created chaos? And you are already left out of the room, and how can you leave coherence in the room, you know? So these were major challenges from a theoretical physics point of view, which was, well, this is impossible. And there was actually even that year a book published by Stanford, you know, Institute, showing that's impossible. Then then there were, you know, all the companies in the world in data storage. They were searching for solutions, even if, you know, theoretically it would be impossible, but they couldn't see. And then what we shown was that it was so easy, and it was always there that even a student could see it. You know,
right.
And what is for me amazing is. So, by the way, what it means? It means that now you can use the light pulse to control the direction of a magnet, one direction or another. It means you can store information. And you can store information so fast now that you can store the information on the human brain, which is estimated at maybe like 20 terabytes or so, in less than 1 second, you know? So this is, so technology now, or physics now, allows technology to do that and to be able to do that only with light. You don't need electrons anymore, you know? So you have photonic devices, not only to transfer information, but also to store it extremely.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk. for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
There's a massive step forward in the potential of computing straight away, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So very interesting to hear how everybody's decided, well, that's not possible. It's what everybody knows. It's all been studied. We're not going there. We're not even going to look because it's not possible.
Yeah.
And then if you just come along with the mindset of like, well, maybe it is, then you actually said that it wasn't that difficult.
It was not that difficult, and even more, what is to me at the limit, you would say close to magic, is that now they study it everywhere, you know, around the world in the major research groups, and now they see it in all the materials where they couldn't see it before.
Right, it was there all along. Yeah, interesting, very interesting. Okay, well, you know, I think there are a lot of parallels with cancer there. So, and science, you know, science as a whole and medicine. Okay, so I think people get the sense from that, well, you've been involved in some detailed technical science You've pushed the boundaries significantly in your early years. So you've kind of got credentials as a scientist from that. But a lot of people nonetheless would say, well, just a minute, you can't just step out of there and step into cancer and suddenly be a cancer expert. You're not, had no training in cancer of any kind, no education in cancer. And in no time at all, you're actually sharing information with other people to help them. And they would see this as risky, have all the potential for leading people astray. How would you respond to them?
Yeah, well, so I would say I would answer with two answers. One answer is that the time that I put in investigating and the motivation that I put in investigating cancer is way beyond the time and the motivation I put in my PhD, which, by the way, I enjoyed a lot. So it's clearly much more time. And on that line, that is also reflected in the fact that later I started publishing in medical space together with scientists in Europe. And I started, as we will discuss later, also collaborating with academic groups from the United States, also in defining clinical trials. So I would say that the results of my understanding in cancer space are reflected in both publishing papers and in collaborations, which otherwise wouldn't be. So that's, I think, one very important. The other answer was related to the fact that like I said before, still, regardless of the references related to who I am and my purpose, my intentions, and so on, everything that I say should be taken as input, and people can judge the quality, whether there is or not from their point of view, but should be taken as input. Shouldn't be taken as, okay, Daniel says, do that and you do that. No. And I struggled a lot with that, you know. I really struggled a lot because my intention is, you know, only God knows what is the best for us. Right. And for some right. people, the best is to go with chemo. Others to, I don't know, just eat, a vegan diet and that's it. And only God knows what is the best for them. And I have to speak with, you know, their healthcare provider, but also to listen to what they feel. Because somehow I believe that in 100 years from now, we'll have the answer to this, what is feeling, you know. At this moment, we believe it's just a connection in the system too, you know, they divide the brain into systems. Mm-hmm. But I believe it's more than that. And I think 100 years from now, that will be science. Now it's, it's religion. Maybe.
That's very interesting. So you're talking about intuition, yeah?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think there are two. So it's on one hand, you have that intuition that is related to learning and like driving, you know? You know, mm-hmm. Now you don't even need to think and the brain is connecting. And then you have the system two of the brain where when I ask you how much is 42 times 67, then, you know, the brain has to put energy into that. And that's the other part, more the constant. And I don't think it's that unconscious that is just connecting based on many things. I think we have kind of antennas that I think they can be developed as well. But I think we have, that is my feeling, my intuition.
Your intuition, yeah, intuition. Right. Excellent. So look, the time's zooming away. We've got so much to talk about. Can you briefly give us a summing up of MCS formulas?
Yes.
Why you set it up, what it's for, what you're trying to achieve with it, very quickly. Yes.
So very quickly, before jumping to that, actually, there is in 2015, cancer treatment research has been done. 2017, I started a foundation called MCS Foundation for Life, incorporated here in the Netherlands, okay. With the idea of doing what I did before to do it in a professional manner. And in that context, we have two major projects. We work with scientists and doctors in Europe in one project related to PH, It's a major subject in oncology, and the other subject with professors in the United States, where we also started some form of clinical trial, is related to glycolysis inhibitors. Okay. So these are two major projects as a part of MCS Foundation for Life. That was in 2017. Then 2019, I decided to stop my job to fully focus on oncology. I had a great job, perfect in terms of everything, but still I said, well, life is going fast and we need to do, you know, more of why we are on this planet. So as long as God wants. So that means I stopped that, not having a salary, and I decided I'm not going to ask people money for coaching. I'm going to help everybody for free as much as I can. But you need financial sustainability, specifically as I want to change the world, not just help a few people, because the cancer treatment research, you know, can be, you know, that can represent that. So that is when, sorry for running very fast through, that is when in 2019, I decided to start MCS Formulas, the supplement company, with the idea of, you know, realizing that this is a major area, major industry. Imagine if you can take at least part of the profits from there and fuel those academic research projects that otherwise wouldn't be supported to accelerate them towards the clinical space. And so that is, you know, the top goal for the company. At the same time, I believe, you know, that everybody that works hard there should be rewarded well. So it's not a foundation, it's a company, you know. Yes. But the goal there is 50% of our profits to go into supporting academic projects. That is one. Second is that at the same time, we are proud now and we are trying, but we already succeeded in a good, with a lot of products to define them as being, the best in the world, and others, some of the best. We are trying with every product to, if it's not the best, you know, to push it to become the best. In terms, what I mean by that, in terms of quality, what is inside, in terms of amount of active ingredients, and doing the best in terms of absorption. So this is kind of the second, like, okay, since we are doing this, we have to do it, to be some of the best. And with a higher purpose is to, support the academic projects. So that is kind of very, on very short, you know, the vision, let's say, and the goals related to MCS Formulas. Mm-hmm. We are already for 2 years active. And it takes a lot of my time. It's much more time than I expected because of the operational part, specifically supplying, all over the world. That makes it so challenging, and keeping people happy, you know, because keeping people happy from, the receiving point of view, because they not only want to have good products, but also receive them fast enough. And I think we are doing well, but it's so difficult behind that to keep that up. And that takes a lot of my time. I'm looking forward to go back, to set up MCS Formulas so that it can run more without me, so I can go back to the research space.
Yeah, I understand. Well, interesting. You talked about the problems inherent in business earlier on, and you're trying to get a one-pointed business here, which doesn't have another agenda, which is not in the patient interest. So very best of luck with that. So look, I want to just round off. I mean, you've spent an amazing amount of your time and energy in advising people as to the options they have, things they can look at, both individually and in a kind of overview way with your website. And I'm just wanting to know at this point what you feel the people can most profitably direct their attention to help them extend and improve their lives, given what we now know.
Yes, of course, this is a difficult question to make it very, short, because there are different, let's say, answers depending on different situations. from the cancer point of, but even financially, what people can access or not, you know. But no matter what, there are always a lot of options. Even if we have almost nothing from money point of view to invest in doing more, you know.
That's
so
great.
I think that's the great, news. But I think to answer your question, what I would do always, I would make sure that I have clear what is my core treatment, whether it's chemo, radio, immunotherapy, or something else. And if I do have one of those core treatments, I would spend time to understand what are the drugs and supplements that can support the effectiveness of those and that can work along those and not against those. And specifically, I would focus on multi-drug or in general on drug resistance mechanisms. And what we see, and just to give you an example, I was speaking with somebody from Singapore who succeeded to deal very well with her pancreatic cancer for a long time. And then at some moment, she was having gemcitabine, so the second line. And at some moment, the markers were going up. And then we thought, hey, gemcitabine, it's a basic type of chemo, not acidic. So it is very important that the acidity around the tumor is minimized to make sure that gemcitabine goes to the tumor. Otherwise, this is a resistance, let's say, mechanism. What can you do about that? Well, a simple way was to, and there are also some clinical trials there, to implement a proton pump inhibitor, omeprazole, in higher dose prior to gemcitabine. And her next result was the markers were going down. And this was so clear what one repurposed drug can do, you know, when you are aware of the resistance mechanism and you are addressing them. And so I think the good news is that we have a lot of science. We have more and more clarity, and we see various organizations or people helping to bring more clarity, like, for example, Care Oncology Clinic, or like Jane McClellan writing the books. So there are, I think, lately we have good people trying to support in creating awareness, not only for patients. I see many doctors implementing now this kind of perspective. And again, with the goal to understand, I would say, first, what are the resistance mechanisms to increase the chance for effectiveness? And there is so much. And I think that's the great news. And what I see, at least myself, is that clearly leads to extending life. And another example is, because the question is, what is extending life? That is in God's hands. And one example is this patient from the United States, also a doctor, also with pancreatic cancer. He used, in combination with his chemo, for similar reasons, hydroxychloroquine. And he is today, cancer-free. He had full, complete response to chemo. So how much we can extend life, it's in God's hands, but we have good reference points to have good expectations.
Right. Well, fantastic story. So you've given some very good guidance there in terms of like, okay, you choose your best option, if you like, for your main treatment, but then you understand it really well and you understand what can go wrong with it and you support that treatment in being as effective as possible. So yeah. Is that a good summary of what you're saying?
Totally agree. And one day we could even spend another discussion on
we could.
And
many other things, may I say. Look, really fascinating, inspiring talk, Daniel. I'm really impressed with the energy, the passion, the determination which you've tackled, the enormous challenges that you've set yourself, and my very best wishes for every success with these efforts.
Thank you so much, Robin. And maybe one point to make it in line with the physics that I brought in our discussion is that I believe that, and as I mentioned also before, is that we are all like photons, you know, trying to make light in a room. And if we work together in a coherent manner, we turn this into a laser beam that can break through a wall. So I think I really appreciate what you are doing, and you are working to bring that coherence to all of us. And I think, you know, we have to take the best. Nobody is perfect, or, you know, I'm not perfect. We have to take the best from each of us, you know, to bring that together. And there is a lot that we can do. And thank you very much for all the work that you do on that line.
Absolutely my pleasure. Well, thank you so much, Daniel.
Very well, Sam.
Bye-bye.
Perfect. Have a very nice day.
It's amazing to have people like Daniel working in the cancer science space in the way he is, with his agenda firmly built around the needs of patients and bringing his unusually unfettered view of science into play. We need it. To find out more, visit his website cancertreatmentsresearch.com, cancertreatmentsresearch.com, as well as mcsfoundationforlife.org, and his supplement company website is mcsformulas.com. Thanks so much for listening. I'd love you to join me again next week for another Yes Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.